Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for March the 30th, 2020. This is Air Force veteran David Corey, along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. We have a very special guest with us this evening, Terrence Hayes, Director of Communications and Public Affairs for the Veterans of Foreign Wars, Washington, D.C. office. Before I introduce our guest, let's first say hello to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard.
Hey there, David, and good evening, everybody. Hope everyone is coping well despite the ongoing crisis due to the coronavirus, also known as COVID-19. Here in Florida, where David and I are, where we live, it seems as if life has almost come to a halt with many businesses closed and people staying in their homes. It certainly is quite a remarkable time for all of us. For those listening to our show, I want to remind you that tonight, and every night, it's a call-in show, and we welcome your views, your comments, and your questions. So you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, that number is 1-888-627-6008, and we really encourage you to call us tonight with Mr. Hayes. You can ask him some questions regarding his role as Director of Communications and Public Affairs for the Veterans of Foreign Wars. Or you can call us and tell us about your own situations dealing with the VA, or even call us and tell us how you're dealing with the coronavirus and how it might even be impacting your situation with the VA. Again, that number is 1-888-627-6008. David, back to you.
Thanks, Richard. Our special guest tonight, Terrence Hayes, is, as I said, the Director of Communications and Public Affairs for the Veterans of Foreign Wars, Washington, D.C. office. Prior to joining the VFW, he served as a public affairs specialist and emergency response coordinator with the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs in Washington, D.C. And before that, he served in the United States Army for 20 years, retiring in August of 2016. Among his various active duty Army assignments, he served as the public affairs advisor to the senior enlisted advisor to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the top enlisted service member in the armed forces in the Pentagon. His military awards and decorations include the Bronze Star, the Defense Meritorious Service Medal, 3 Meritorious Service Medals, and many more. He served in Operation Iraqi Freedom from December of 2006 to March of 2008. In his present position, he serves as the official spokesperson for the VFW. So let's welcome Terrence Hayes to the Veterans News Hour. Welcome, Terrence. How are you, and how are things with the VFW during this coronavirus era?
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for allowing me the opportunity to join you this evening and just discuss with your audience the magnificent things that the VFW is doing these days. I can tell you that, COVID-19 definitely is an issue that we're definitely monitoring closely. But I can tell you that our VFW members across the globe have continued to do what they do best, and that's continue to serve our veterans, our service members, and our military families, even in this crisis today.
Well, it's our privilege to have you with us tonight, and there's so much we can talk about as far as the VFW, an organization I've been impressed with for so many years. And I know it has many programs and services and many legislative goals that they just presented to Congress weeks ago. So what would you like to discuss first about the VFW?
Well, first, I guess we could stay on the topic of just, the coronavirus pandemic. Like I said earlier, we have some amazing VFW members who are doing some great things in their communities under these conditions. And we understand that, a lot of these areas have these stay-at-home orders that have been issued across the country. But several of our VFW members have taken it upon themselves to kind of roger up and gather together and still to deliver to, the members of the community in their areas. And that's definitely a kudos to them and a kudos to what the VFW stands for. I'll give you an example. VFW Post 170 in Poughkeepsie, New York, right now is working to ensure children impacted by area school closures don't go hungry. They're organizing as a community to serve as a drop-off point for food and donations that can be delivered to those affected children. And that's just one of several different instances of what our members are doing throughout the country during this COVID-19 pandemic to ensure that they're doing their part to help their fellow neighbor as well.
That's awesome. I know when I served in the Air Force, one of the core values was service before self. And it's great to hear that, you know, so many veterans have carried that forward once they've left active duty, you know, that they're doing these kinds of projects. And there's a great need for that. And I think veterans have special skills, traits and qualities and training that they can bring to these sort of crises. And I know among your many positions that you've held, was with one included at the VA with as emergency response coordinator. So I guess you probably were in a position to help the VA being prepared for these sorts of things.
Oh, definitely. during my nearly 3 years there, I served as the emergency coordinator, or one of the emergency coordinators for the department, specifically for my department. And, you know, anytime we had a hurricane or tornado or, you know, any natural disaster, we were called upon to come up with a strategy for how we would not only just communicate with our veteran population, but how we would deliver services and things of that nature to them to ensure that they had everything that they needed during that crisis.
Yeah, and living in Florida, as you know, every June and November it's hurricane season, and
yeah.
even if we don't get a direct strike, you know, I'm on the email list for the VA, and I'll get emails from Bay Pines Medical Center or James Haley Medical Center about possible, you know, things to know about and regional office issues. So it's really, public affairs is a really important role. It's you know, people need to know what's going on, and so. Go ahead.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, communication, as you know, is paramount to just everything we do. And, you know, one option is definitely not to fail to communicate. So we definitely want to ensure that, you know, we're communicating to our membership within the VFW family, but also to those who we serve within our fellow communities, our neighbors, and things of that nature. So we're all in this together.
Right. Those are great points. Now, if you could tell us more about the VFW. I know our listening audience certainly has a general idea about the VFW. There are so many other major veteran groups as well, and maybe if you could distinguish what VFW from some of the other ones.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll do. VFW is the oldest major war veterans organization in our nation. We started up in 1899, and that was even predating the Veterans Administration, which it was called back then. The VFW is actually one of the VSO's veteran service organizations that was instrumental in founding the Department of Veterans Affairs. So I think that's a little known fact that that many people don't know to this day. But currently we have about 1.6 million members, and that encompasses obviously our veteran population, but also our auxiliary, which is spouses or dependents of you know, men and women who have served in combat. So we're definitely, you know, appreciative of every member of our organization, to include our spouses and our dependents, because they're the very backbone of what we do. I'll give you an example of what we've done just this past year. $9 billion. I kind of throw that out there because that's the total amount of VFW that the VFW has helped veterans this year alone recoup in VA disability compensation and pension benefits.
$9 billion.
That's a huge amount. But and we've done that through our service officers. Those are the individuals who are responsible for helping you know, veterans file claims. And we ensure that the claims are done accurately and in a timely manner, and that there's no red tape and things of that nature as it kind of moves through the VA system. And but $9 billion, and I'll tell you what, we have 2,100 service officers around the globe responsible for recouping that $9 billion. So kudos to those service officers for what they do day in and day out, because they're the very backbone of what we do in ensuring that, you know, our veterans receive the compensation and benefits packages that they deserved and that they've earned throughout their service.
that's really amazing, and all the VFW does. As someone who tries to keep up with the different veteran organizations, I was really impressed when I read recently that the VFW made a presentation to Congress. I think it was on March the 4th, so just early this month. Where they were being very proactive. They had presented a very thorough agenda, basically to the Veteran Affairs Committee's House and Senate about how things can be improved. And I was just so impressed with the thoroughness of those things and the thought behind all of those. Anything that you'd like to emphasize as far as the VFW's goals, legislative goals, anything of that nature?
Yeah, definitely. Just like you said, March 4th was a big day for us. Our national commander, William Doc Smits, testified before Congress on our priority goals for the year. And every year, I'll give you an example, every year we gather in D.C. And we bring all of our state VFW commanders and their legislative folks to the district to storm the Hill. And that's what we call a storming the Hill, because it's important because it allows them from their states to go and meet with their congressional leaders, their senatorial leaders, and talk about various issues that are near and dear to them and their communities. That obviously center around veterans and veteran families. And it was a very successful conference that we had, because we had nearly 500 people storm the Hill. And they engaged their senatorial and congressional leadership. And a lot of things were getting done. It wasn't just lip service. And we know now, obviously, you know, what's going on today, that, you know, some things may have been put to the back burner, and rightfully so, because, you know, priority number one is the health and welfare of the American people. But, yes, you know, once this pandemic kind of slows down and we get back to some sense of normalcy, I truly believe that the congressional and senatorial leaders will get back to what they do and will refocus back on what our folks came to do and talk about and focus on veteran issues and ensure that our veterans and their families are taken care of.
Yeah, and I'm sure even if things can't be accomplished this Congress, VFW's long history and track record shows they're going to be in it for the long haul, fighting these issues, whether it's health care for veterans, whether it's improving the disability compensation system, education, employment, military quality of life, just a long list of ideas and specific recommendations to Congress. So I was just really impressed with those.
Without question. The number one that we worked with Congress on now and we're still focused on today is Agent Orange. And right now we're having a hang-up between the VA and the White House, unfortunately, where there's four presumptive diseases that scientists have said are connected to Agent Orange, but they remain off the list. And that's big for us, because we have Vietnam War veterans who are dying right now. And they're dealing with these diagnoses, and they need to be treated, and they need to receive the compensation and benefits that they have earned. And we need something to be done about it, not tomorrow, but today.
Yeah, I think I'm familiar with that. That's the Fair Care for Vietnam Veterans Act. I think that's what you're referring to, if I'm correct.
We're focused on the Blue Water Act, and because obviously you had also sailors who were off the coast of Vietnam. And unfortunately, for some long, you know, length of time, they weren't recognized as Vietnam War veterans and weren't able to, you know, claim certain health issues. And but now we're working that situation with Congress and the Department of VA, and they're able to get some sort of relief that they've earned. But there's still a lot more that we can do for those men who are serving on along our coast and in the Vietnam time frame.
Oh, absolutely.
And as you know, yesterday was, you know, the recognition of Vietnam War Day as well. So that's why it's definitely a big deal to us, and we definitely need to do whatever we can to to ensure that our Vietnam War veterans are taken care of. Because unfortunately, unlike myself as an Operation Iraqi War veteran, when I returned home from war, I was well received. I can't tell you the number of quite a countless amounts of things that people had done for me when I came back just to recognize me for my service. Unfortunately, our Vietnam War veterans weren't done that way, and it's a shame that that they weren't treated as we were treated. And one thing that they've told us is that they, you know, they fought long and hard to ensure that we weren't received as they were, and that's why it's vital that we take care of them and that we give them the benefits and the compensation that they deserve for them and their families after they've passed away.
Now, another issue that ties into your discussion of Operation Iraqi Freedom, and we've had guests before on our show about the toxic exposure from these open air burn pits.
Yes, yes.
And I know you were over there. You were over there in the time where they had the big surge.
I was. I got extended.
Oh, you got extended.
Yeah, I was supposed to be there for a year, and it turned into 15 glorious months.
Wow. Can you share with us what that was like during that time frame?
Yeah. I mean, I will say this. I actually volunteered to go over there because I wanted to lead troops into combat, and I was afforded that opportunity. It's something that I don't take lightly. I think that any leader will tell you that it's something that you always train for, and you always want to make sure that you're doing the right thing by your soldiers and their families, because as a leader, you're basically holding their lives in your hands, and you want to basically bring them back as you took them over, and their families are entrusting you to do that. But when we got over there, the first 3 months were, I would say, some of the hardest months of our deployment. I think on average, and we were housed at the in Baghdad, and I can tell you it's where the headquarters were for Multinational Corps Iraq. And on average, we were getting rockets shot across the wire, as we call it, on a daily basis. And
wow.
I think in the entire country of Iraq, unfortunately, we were losing within the first 3 to 6 months, I would say about 6 to 8 soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines a day.
Oh, man.
So you kind of do the math on that. And fortunately, that number dwindled down to where it was zero towards the end of our deployment. But I can tell you that the first 3 to 6 months were some of the most nervous months of my life, and I definitely will never forget that time frame being there in Iraq.
Well, thank God you made it back safely. I served in the Air Force, never was in combat. The closest I got to Iraq was in Dahran, Saudi Arabia, and a couple other places.
Right.
Arabia back in 92, and Dahran got hit with a Scud missile. Those Scud missiles were not precision weapons, really, but a lucky strike hit a barracks in Dahran and killed a couple dozen people back in 91. So it's there's no front line anymore with modern warfare, at least over in Iraq.
Exactly. Everybody's on the front line today.
Yeah. So that surge time, which that surge of troops. Probably start. The first 3 or 4 months you said was really a tough time, and then is that when the troop surge then really hit in, like in the summer of 07?
Yeah. So when the late spring, early summer is when the surge actually came into play, and shortly before then, that's when General Petraeus came in and changed out commands, and that's when he brought in his new strategy for how we would engage the enemy. And fortunately, that brought in extra troops from various different locations, and we were able to overpower the enemy. And I could tell you that you could definitely see the tide turn the minute that extra forces came in, and his strategy definitely was what did it for our time over there. So definitely grateful for that time frame. Because you could definitely see how things changed, but nonetheless, it was still a difficult time frame because we were still, unfortunately, losing troops.
Yeah, because that was it. I remember just That was 4 years into the war, and things were really, it was a rough time before, and a tough call about to go into the surge. But let me ask you, if you can share with us, because I know a couple of issues that the VFW has discussed with Congress includes the open burn pits, but also the fact that blast injuries from IEDs, yes. Traumatic brain injury, and physical injuries, but other, you know, PTSD are all big issues from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. Anything you'd like to share with us about those things, either with, you know, your own experience or that now with the VFW, that ideas for Congress that perhaps can make things better for our veterans?
Definitely. One thing I'll say is that, several of us have been involved in blast injuries who served over in Iraq and Afghanistan. And one thing we want folks to understand, you know, across the nation, is that PTSD, TBI, traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress disorder, are serious and significant injuries. And even though you can't see them, you know, they're more or less those invisible wounds. Yeah. They can be just as significant as the ones you can see, whether you see an individual with a lost limb or anything like that. So we want to ensure that our servicemen and women understand that, if they suffer from a traumatic brain injury or from PTSD, that it's okay to seek the help that they need. We want to encourage that, because the last thing we want to do is downplay that sort of injury or try to compare it to another injury of another service man or woman and, have them fall in line with the stigma that, nothing's wrong with me. And then, right. Once they don't get the help that they need while they're in service, they're going to have that much more difficult time when they're out of service trying to get the help that they need from the Department of Veterans Affairs, because there's no paper trail of them trying to, seek the help that they needed. And I don't know if you were following back in January, obviously, with the retaliatory attacks from Iran and Iraq on our troops. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we had initially it was about 30 or so service members who were injured due to TBI. And it was unfortunate that the president came out and stated that the injuries weren't significant, that, he had heard they were just, mild headaches or whatever the case may be. But one thing that the VFW did was we immediately stood up our national commander, Doc Smith, as a former doc in Vietnam, said, hey, whoa, we gotta stop that. We need the president to understand, and whomever advised him, that, hey, these injuries are significant. These are hidden injuries. These are wounds that folks, once again, may not be able to see.
Right.
But we're still trying to research the long-term effects of brain injuries and blasts and things of that nature. And as you know, yes, initially it could be a minor headache. It could be a concussion. But those things can lead to further things, and that not only just affect the service member, but can affect his or her family, their employment, just other things that, just fall in line with their psyche and their psychological well-being. So we have to kind of put a kibosh on, comparing, these injuries to one another, because that's not what you want to do. You do not want to pit a service member against another service member, saying, hey, well, my leg injury is bigger than your head injury. No, we don't do that. Each injury is significant to each service member, and it's vital that all of our leadership is on the same page when it comes to that, because we need to encourage, we need to support these men and women who are in harm's way, that, hey, if you are faced with any type of injury, you must get the help that you need, and we want to ensure that you do that.
Oh, those are great, great points and things that Richard Hurley and I see with in helping veterans here in Florida, that what you said about sometimes there's lack of a paper trail, and that's why veterans need to seek out the help from VFW, from other VSOs, and try to avoid the tendency that I see with a lot of veterans is once they come home, once they leave active duty, so many of them tend to kind of isolate themselves for any number of understandable reasons, but they've lost sort of the camaraderie, they've lost the support of being a part of a team, they've lost the support of being on a post or an installation,
right.
And then it becomes tougher. The years go by, but meanwhile, they've suffered, their families have suffered, they haven't been able to hold jobs, on and on. Another issue that I wanted, if you would touch on, would be the open-air burn pits. We've had guests on our show in the past that have described, mm-hmm. they were served over in Iraq, too, they've described these massive open burn pits that are just acres and acres, burning 24/7.
Yes.
They had jet fuel poured on them. They're burning every imaginable kind of waste and toxic
chemicals.
Stuff. Yes. And I know, you know, comparing it to the Vietnam era with Agent Orange, it took the VFW and other veteran groups literally decades to get the VA's attention to get. And I'm hoping we're not going to see the same thing. So I hope the VFW and other veteran groups too will really take it to Congress and the VA, maybe to come up with a presumptive list, you know, like they have for Agent Orange. What are your thoughts?
Yes. Yeah, so we're all over that, sir, as a matter of fact. Thanks for bringing that up. We're actually working in concert with our other fellow VSOs, the American Legion, MOA, DAV, and we're joining forces to ensure that that our servicemen and women who have suffered various ailments, illnesses, things of that nature, because of burn pits, don't suffer the same fate and don't suffer the same length of fight that our Vietnam veterans did with Agent Orange. And we've been able to make some headway there, but we still have a long fight ahead of us. And Congress has been, a lot of folks have joined with us, but we need a lot more to join the fight with us so we can, you know, kind of get some of these resolutions through the House and the Senate and hopefully across the president's desk, that we can sign some of these things into law that can protect our folks who have been in constant contact with these burn pits.
I'm sure hoping so, and I'm hoping that they kind of follow something you were talking about earlier, which was, you know, they're taking it directly to the congressional committees on, you know, the four additional diseases, bladder cancer,
yes.
hypertension, hyperthyroidism, Parkinson's, that the VA as an agency has refused to add to the list, even though there's evidence that they should be, and sort of also comparing it to the Camp Lejeune toxic water situation where back, I think, in 2012, Congress actually held hearings and passed a statute that enabled health care for, I think, for veterans and their families that had any one of 15 different diseases. They did it by statute as opposed to just punting over to the VA. But then on the other hand, for the disability compensation, they punted over to the VA to come up with a presumptive list for disability claims, and years went by, about 5 years went by, and they came up with a much shorter list. So I'm hoping that,
right.
that maybe VFW and other groups can get the committees to do what they have the power to do, which is hold hearings,
right.
pass statutes instead of just deferring to VA regulations, which we know what the VA is going to do. They're going to study
right.
it to death. But so
yeah, and we're in full agreement with exactly what you're saying. We're going to continue to, you know, to fight, and we're going to continue to meet with the members of Congress to ensure that you know, that these servicemen and women are, you know, receiving the health care and the benefits that they deserve. I'll give you an example of one of the fights that we were successful with just this past year. We were able to eliminate what's called the widow's tax. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but for decades, you know, spouses of folks who have passed away in you know, in the line of duty weren't able to receive the benefits that they had earned. And it was quite disrespectful, despicable, unexplainable, and just unjust. For example, we had a spouse whose loved one died in combat. And so normally what happens is, you know, obviously the service member is due to receive what's called the Survivor Benefit Plan, and that comes from the Department of Defense. And then you have what's called the DIC, which is the Dependent Indemnity Compensation. That comes from the Department of Veterans Affairs. So bottom line is, the spouse or, you know, the loved one who's you know, remains here was supposed to receive both of those entitlements. Unfortunately, there was a law in place that prevented them from receiving it, and there was an offset. So basically, they were receiving only one of those benefits. And if anybody knows the impact of not being able to, you know, receive, you know, your spouse's basically full income just like that, and especially with spouses who do not work and have children and take care of the home, and that was their work, was working in the home, and all of a sudden their husband or their wife is no longer there with that income, it was putting our spouses in poverty. And as a Department of Defense, as a Department of VA, as a nation, that's just inexplainable. You know, to just kind of just throw away our spouses, not present them with the monies that they deserve to ensure that they carry on after already losing, you know, a loved one. It was just unexplainable. It was unjust. And we were able to actually fight that. It took several years, though. But the VFW led the way on that charge, along with our widows, and we were able to add that into the NDAA this past year that was signed into law by the president back in late December. And now the widow's tax has been eliminated. And I believe starting next year is when widows should be able to receive both entitlements. And it's a long, you know, it's long overdue, and it should have never came into play from the beginning.
I agree. I think it's just all about money, which unfortunately is too much of a factor in D.C. But you're right. It's unconscionable. It's a great injustice that these widows and dependent children would be penalized, and they've just lost their spouse. They just, you know,
exactly.
They just
now they have to deal. Now they have to deal with the fact of the government or whatever entity is preventing them from carrying on financially. So now you're adding on another burden to what they're already dealing with, and there was no need for that to even come into play. But like you said, unfortunately, it was all about, you know, the dollar. But we were able to actually find the dollars. And that was the thing that made it so tough and why it kept getting shot down, is that year after year we would present this argument, and we'd have the support and everything, but they'd come back to us and say, well, we don't know where to get the money. Well, we had a VFW member who is actually suffering from cancer himself because of burn pits, and he wanted to ensure that before he passed away, and he's only 41 years old, that's the sad part, 41-year-old, retired, airman in the United States Air Force, just retired a few years ago. He wanted to ensure that his wife, his children were taken care of after he passes away, and he led that charge. And without him finding the money, you know, within the budget, I don't know what we would have done. And without him leading that way, we wouldn't be able to eliminate the widow's tax.
Wow, kudos to him, and it really shows the difference one person or even a small group of people can make with persistence and you know, really taking it to the hill, you know, Capitol Hill.
Exactly.
And making sure, you know, one thing that I noticed when I was on active duty that really was an eye-opening thing was, you know, when you're on active duty, and this is just my perception. I mean, other people may have different perceptions. When you're on active duty, you know, you're part of the team. But once you're off active duty, and this also applies to widows and children, you know, when the service member has been killed, that I had an experience where my next door neighbor, one of my assignments, was a pilot. He got killed in a crash, and his family had to leave military housing within 30 days, return, and it was they had advice about their benefits, et cetera. But it just struck me how, you know, it's like out of sight, out of mind. You know, yes,
right.
Yes, we have a memorial service. Yes, we recognize your loss. And then 3 weeks later, it's like we've moved on, and they kind of forget. And that's why groups like the VFW that are made of veterans, and as you said earlier, you know, spouses, that they know what it was like, and they know what it was like to leave active duty, and they really need to be the voice Because otherwise, things like this offset that you were talking about, this DIC, Ferrari rental plan offset, would have just continued, you know.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of other things, too, and it really affects the families, whether it's the, you know, people suffering from cancer from the burn pits, or Agent Orange, and just the nature of war and PTSD and all these things. So.
Right. So, to transition, I wanted to, you know, just talk about a couple of the good news programs
that
the VFW has available, and especially in concert with some of our partners. And just last year, we were able to award $7.2 million of scholarships to 1,600 plus veterans and service members actively serving right now through what's called the VFW's Sport Clips Help a Hero Scholarship. And that started in January of 2014. And we're very proud of that program because obviously we know that, you know, service members who are actively serving right now are entitled to their GI Bill and things of that nature. But a lot of those service members are basically, you know, handing that GI Bill to their families. And that's a great you know, entitlement to do that with, especially with the rising cost of tuition these days.
Yeah.
And but also we want to ensure that those service members still are able to get their education as well. So they're able to, you know, apply for this scholarship. And the great news about this scholarship is that you receive like a $1,500 scholarship, and you can apply for this thing multiple times. And all you have to do is just go on the VFW website and click on, you know, Help a Hero Scholarship. And you're able to kind of maneuver through this process. You'll apply online, and within a matter of days or so, you're able to hopefully receive some monetary commitment to further your education. So there's just another good news story between the VFW and one of his corporate sponsors, Sport Clips, where we're helping, you know, service members and veterans earn their education.
Well, that's great. And so the website would be vfw.org, and then look for what was the
Help a Hero Scholarship.
Help a Hero Scholarship. Very good.
Yes,
that's awesome.
And another thing that we've done is 11.6 million. So I'm gonna throw some figures out there, but $11.6 million. That's the amount of money that we've provided through our Unmet Needs Program, and basically Unmet Needs Program is where, you know, a veteran or a service member, and there's some qualification and eligibility requirements that you have to, you know, to meet in order to receive these this financial assistance. But we were able to award $11.6 million last year to military families who needed some kind of help because they were dealing with a crisis. And these are all grants. These aren't loans. These aren't items that you have to pay back or anything like that. Once again, it's the application process. And once again, we understand that, you know, the military services have various programs to give, you know, financial needs to the service member and their families. But sometimes it doesn't, you know, supplement the entire crisis.
Right.
And that's where we as the VFW step in. And we work this program alongside Burger King, another one of our outstanding sponsors who assists us throughout the year and has committed to us for several years on this Unmet Needs Program. And we're very proud of the fact that we're able to lend a hand. And it's not necessarily giving a handout to individuals, but it's just helping them out to get through whatever crisis they're in, because we've all been there.
Right. Oh, and $11.6 million, that's an impressive figure. So how can those in the service, or those who might need this, how can they find out more about that program, the Unmet Needs?
Yeah, definitely. What you want to do is, once again, go to www.vfw.org, and you'll find, click on the Assistance tab. And then once you click on the Assistance tab, it'll take you to the website to where you'll see the Unmet Needs program, and you just click on there, you'll see the application process, fill that bad boy out, and like I said, within a matter of a couple of days, you'll receive a call back from a representative at the VFW.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's something that would really come in handy in a crisis. And we all know how unpredictable military life can be and tough on families in some instances. So let me turn this over to Richard Hurley. Richard, do you have any questions?
Well, first I just want to commend you on all the work that you and the VFW are doing for the our veterans, our men and women veterans out there. I think it's just sitting back listening. It's awesome. But it also, you know, David and I spend our days helping vets and working with getting them their disability compensation. And
right,
my hours are long. They start at 4, and I go like I'm still working. It's constant. You know, you made a comment about, you know, it's all about the money, and I see that all the time. It's probably the biggest frustration that I see, that these men and women who gave everything that they had to this country, and that yet they get nickel and dime by Congress and the VA. And I'm sure you've seen the same frustration.
Yes.
You know, all the work you're doing, and thank God that, you know, organizations like yourself and other organizations that are out there are doing the work that, quite frankly, our VA should be doing and Congress should be doing. Do you putting everything aside, what you do, do you see the frustration on your end?
Oh, I do. I'll give you an example. As you stated earlier, I used to work for the Department of Veterans Affairs almost 3 years, and I saw the frustration. I listened to the calls of folks calling in and wondering why it's, you know, taking so long to, you know, get what they've earned, and the struggles and the appeals and the denials and things of that nature when they came to their claims. And you get tired of hearing about those struggles with that large, you know, department of, you know, why can't they just help these individuals out? They've given to our country. You know, the least we can do is help them maneuver through this compensation and disability process. And coming over to the real advocacy side of the house, on the Veteran Service Organization side with the VFW, we actually get things done. We actually work hand in hand with the veteran and are able to take on their claims process and serve as their proctor or, you know, things of that nature, and kind of maneuver through the system and serve on their behalf. And we know when the VA's sugarcoating things for us, we know how to maneuver through, and we know the regulations and the policies inside and out. And that's the great thing about our veteran service officers, is that they're fully trained to do that. We have the most highly qualified veteran service officers in the business. Each of the VSOs has veteran service officers, but our service officers are trained twice as much as every other service officer in the DAV and American Legion and so on and so forth. VA mandates by law that veteran service officers are to receive 40 hours of training. Well, the VFW says that's not enough. We ensure that our veteran service officers receive 80 hours of training because we want them to know the ins and outs of the process. And that way, when a veteran comes to us or someone who's still actively serving comes to us and says, hey, here's my packet, can you help me out? All they need to do is just present the packet, and we'll be able to maneuver through their medical records and file their claim and ensure that they get what they deserve and the maximum what they should deserve, because the VA is only going to give the bare minimum, especially if you are the individual who put the claim together. They're not going to tell you the ins and outs and what you should do and how to help you get to what you really really deserve and what you really earned. They're not going to do that. But the VSO, the VFW, that's what we do. We're going to ensure that you get exactly what you've earned to ensure that, you know, you're able to carry on long after service.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, David and I, we see that all the time as well. I mean, you know, I just got a case in, and I'm seeing this now all the time, a lot, which is the veteran gets an increase from 80 to 90%. And you think, oh, that's great. And then you look and you analyze the decision and you see that when they were at 80, they were getting, I'm just throwing out, 70% for PTSD and 10% for tinnitus and 20% for hearing and 30% for migraines. And then all of a sudden the decision, they get an increase, but it only goes up to 90. And then you look down and they take away the 30% for the migraines.
Right.
You know, it's like, wait,
it's
a second.
It's such an antiquated system.
You know, you go
that no one really understands the process.
So it's my personal opinion, okay, and I'm not a veteran, but I'm a trained litigator from New Jersey. And it's my, and I used to work in-house counsel for insurance companies. So I know, I'm of the opinion the playbook that the VA uses is the exact same playbook that the insurance companies use in civilian life. And I can't help but think that who's ever behind this, that kind of decision, and I've seen it a lot lately, they're doing the numbers.
Right.
And they're saying, wait a second, if we let this one go forward, this guy's going to get 100%. Well, we can't do that. We're going to pull this one back, make something up. We're going to take him from 30 to zero, and now he's at 90. He did get an increase, so he should be happy about that. But you and I both know if they left things alone, his increase would have gone to 100, which instead of a $1,600 or $1,700 monthly paycheck would have been $3,200.
Right.
I mean, it's all about the money. And, you know, I've been doing this for so long now, and I've been analyzing these types of decisions. And they're just, you know, and I've got contacts at the St. Pete Regional Office, and I bring this up to them, and they go, oh, no, we don't do that. I'm like, look at it. Look what you're doing. You can't tell me you don't do that. And it's very frustrating. I feel so bad for so many veterans, and I understand why they give up.
Oh, without question. Yeah. That's the sad part. You get a lot of folks who maneuver through the system and don't understand that they can come to a VSO like ours, like the VFW, to, you know, fight on their behalf. And then they do, like you say, sir, they give up. And it's terrible because they're leaving not just money on the table, but, you know, you don't know how you're going to be 10, 15, 20 years from now. And what the cost of medical supplies, what's the cost of prescriptions, prescription drugs, you know, normal procedures, all those things will play, you know, into, you know, your finances down the road, but you don't see it today. And but like you said, yes, it's always about the money, and that's very unfortunate.
You know, and the other thing that, you know, I is a common practice that I have with veterans is that it's not just about their disability and getting service connected for the disabilities that are associated with their service, but then how it impacts their spouse, who one day may be a widow.
Right.
And,
exactly.
You know, so often when they've been through the system and they say to me, well, no one ever brought that up to me, that my wife would be eligible for certain benefits after I died. I said, well,
it ties into
part
of it. It ties into the DIC survivor benefit issue that Terrence was talking about before. So we're gentlemen, I think we're running towards the end of our show. It's been a fast and fascinating show so far. And before we go, Terrence, anything you'd like to also share about the VFW and perhaps how veterans can join the VFW, how they can find out more, those kinds of
definitely.
Things?
Definitely. Definitely. You know, first and foremost, as we've shared earlier, you know, any veteran out there who needs assistance, it doesn't matter if you served in combat or not, if you need some sort of assistance, whether that's with a VA claim or, you know, you're going through a crisis, reach out to the VFW. Just come to our website at www.vfw.org, and we're there to help you, whether that's through our unmet needs program, whether that's through financial assistance for furthering your education, whether that's through trying to get you in touch with a veteran service officer to maneuver you through the claims process. We're here for you. And we would love to have you join our organization. It's a fabulous organization. We're continuing to grow across the country. We're adding younger and younger youth to our organization. Post 9/11 veterans are joining in record numbers right now. And we would love to have you join our ranks as well. All you have to do, once again, is go to vfw.org to find out more about how to join the organization. And if you meet the requirements, please do, because at the end of the day, we need to ensure that this organization has its longevity, especially on Capitol Hill, because without the VSOs, without the VFW fighting on the behalf of veterans and their families and our actively serving service members, who's going to be there to fight for us on the Hill? So it's vital that that we continue on, and we need you to be a part of the fight.
Well, thank you so much. We'd like to thank Terrence Hayes, the Director of Communications and Public Affairs for the VFW, Washington, D.C. office. Thank you so much for being our special guest tonight. And you have an open invitation. Anytime you can join us again and update us on the great things that VFW is doing for our veterans and their families, I hope you'll join us again sometime.
Will do. Hopefully next time I'll be able to come back home to my great state of Florida and actually be in the studio with you.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks so much. Have a great evening and a great week.
Thanks, gentlemen. I truly appreciate you.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thanks again. Thanks again to our special guest, Terrence Hayes. It was a great privilege to have him with us tonight, and we hope all our listeners will, if they're eligible, join the VFW and at least check out VFW.org. It's an impressive organization. There's a lot to share. Now, Richard, I know we're about running out of time, and I know we don't want to miss our weekly reminder to veterans about the Coaching into Care program, so perhaps if you'll share that with us.
Yeah, and just 1 second. I just want to remind veterans out there, if you do have a BVA hearing that you're aware of that might that's between now and May 1st, and the BVA or the VA has not been in touch with you, unless you're doing that hearing at your lawyer's office or your representative office, that hearing will be postponed. So you want to reach out and just double check with VA or the BVA. Check with your representative or your attorney, and they'll follow up for you. But once again, before we close tonight, we'd like to provide you with our weekly reminder to veterans and their families about an important VA program called Coaching into Care. This program helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call. That number is toll-free 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, that number at Coaching into Care is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has Veterans Crisis Line that can help you. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they need. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. That number is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Thank you, Richard, and thanks again to our special guest, Terrence Hayes. In upcoming weeks, we will have guests from other organizations and advocacy groups. Next week, we're going to have a representative from AMVETS, another major nationwide veteran organization. And in upcoming weeks, we will include representatives from Iraq and Afghanistan, Veterans of America, IAVA, as well as Disabled American Veterans and other groups such as Military Officers Association of America and many more. So stay tuned. We hope you enjoyed tonight's show. We thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli, as well as Corey and Hurley Law Group. I'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, for the great work he does for us every week. And we hope you'll tune in next week, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time here on bbsradio.com, Station 1, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, stay safe and stay healthy. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.